Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Today, my guest is Nate Moreno. Nate served in and deployed with the Pennsylvania National Guard. After returning, he's worked in a number of positions and recently became a Bunker Labs city leader, a VFW post commander, president of ADP's Military Strong program in Pittsburgh, and also started a veteran outdoor apparel company called Ridgeline Ruck Apparel Company. And if that wasn't enough for any one person, Nate has also offered to come on the show and share a story about how he's been able to live what he calls a profound life. So welcome to the show, Nate. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Hey, what's up, Scott? Thank you for having me on the show, man. Yeah, just kind of subtly slipped into the veteran ecosystem, I guess. I mean, I guess it really puts it in perspective when you list all those things out. It's like, you know, no wonder I'm single and just I'm a plant dad. So I keep myself busy. But yeah, man, I was in the Pennsylvania National Guard from 2012 to 2019. I was a combat engineer in the 876th Brigade Engineer Battalion. Love it. Much love to the engineers. But yeah, it kind of started in 2009 when I graduated high school. We were surging in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And I knew I wanted to go to the military. I'm an Army brat. I was born overseas. My dad was in the 82nd. So I'd always had that influence. My grandfather was in. You know, I just wanted to follow the legacy. It was always in the cards for me. So in 2009, I'm just not a good student, and there's no, you know, I'm just not a good conventional student. I suck at taking tests. I hate school. So I went in and just, you know, hot dogged it, took the ASVAB and just completely blew it, but I still passed. So I was just kind of in this moment of like, I didn't know what direction I wanted to go. I just needed some structure. So I was like, screw it. I'll go be an 88 Mike, you know, no offense to any truck drivers. I was a truck driver. So he ended up talking me out of it. He was like, look, just study for it, you know, go back, take the test, see how it comes out. So, you know, that translated to me as, Nate, you should move to Sarasota, Florida, not knowing anybody and live at the beach. So, you know, threw a bag of clothes in my 89 Jeep Cherokee and went and cut up down in Sarasota for, you know, about a year or a couple of months to a year. And, you know, that really shot a quick shot of reality into me, and I was like, okay, I have to go do something with my life. So I drove back up to Pittsburgh. I got into the ROTC program at the University of Pittsburgh. I was going for Army ROTC, and I was working full-time at Flint's Tire, you know, it's a local tire shop. I was working in the garage full-time. I was waking up at like 4:30, going to PT, doing military science, going to work an eight-hour shift, and then going back to community college to take classes or earn credits. I mean, it was just a hustle, dude. And then eventually after year two in ROTC, they were like, hey, if you want to continue with the program, you're going to have to contract in, you know, you have to have a required amount of credits a year. And, you know, God bless my parents, you know, we're not, you know, I come from a blue collar family. I didn't have a fund set up for my school, and I was just doing the best I could. And they were like, we're sorry, you know, you can't continue with the program. And I couldn't quit my job. You know, I was paying all my own bills. So we had a National Guard liaison there and at our detachment, and he put me in the guard. He sold me the combat engineer thing, and I was super excited about it. You know, who doesn't want to blow shit up? So I went and enlisted in the summer of 2012. I shipped out to basic in July or September of 2012. And I got home and I just stayed working for the same job. I was driving a tire truck around the city, you know, perfectly fine. I lived a blue collar life. That's what I knew. And then I got orders to deploy. And this is actually kind of a screwed up part of it is, you know, my grandfather, God rest his soul, Dominic Chofi, he passed away. He was the only one I knew. He was the only one that knew that I got a call or got put on notice that I might be deploying. What happened was I was actually driving the, you know, tire truck around, and I get this email on my phone, and it says, hey, HHC company is taking one combat engineer from the line platoon to deploy to Kosovo for a multinational battle group with NATO. First name to hit my desk gets the spot. This is my XO. So I just jump straight over the chain of command, call everybody. I'm like, what do I have to do to go? At this point, I'm like 5 years into my contract. All of our deployment notices got canceled. No one got title 10s. I mean, we were going through train up and then, you know, they would cancel the deployment. So we were supposed to go on a few. And I started feeling that pressure, man. Like, hey, you know what? I was never going to be a lifer in the military, but I wanted to do my job. I wanted to get, you know, I wanted to get in it. I was surrounded by Iraq and Afghanistan at the time. That it all deployed from my unit. So it was like, I had these guys to look up to. I'll never measure up to them. Even after a deployment to Kosovo, I could just never see myself measuring up to these guys who went so hard combat. So one thing led to another, you know, I put my name in. I was second on the list. Somebody beat me by like 15 seconds. I was heartbroken. I was like, God, you know, I don't want to wish death on this person, but you know, a fractured leg will heal. Like, you know, like I don't want them to die, but let them get sick so I could go on this deployment. It's super fucked up, but you know, it is what it is. But so fast forward a couple of months, I only told my grandfather this was occurring, and you know, he's a Navy vet, so we talked about it a little bit, and then unfortunately a couple months later he passed. So I still didn't know if I was going or not. I was still in the hopper behind one person, and we're getting close to that part where SRP is starting and you're starting to get all your affairs in line to go over. It is literally the day of his funeral. We are getting ready to put him in the ground, and I get my phone start going off. And I see it's my readiness NCO, and he goes, Nate, the guy that was supposed to go ahead of you, he's like a tier 3 dental thing, you know, he's teeth were all rotten. It would have taken surgery. So he wasn't going to make it through SRP. And then I just read the text. He was like, you're going. We need you at the unit tomorrow to start going through SRP. So like my heart just drops through my, you know, through my chest. You know, you get that news and it doesn't matter where you're going. It's just the most exciting thing, you know, for a young soldier when you find out you're going, you know? And, I was like, well, you know, it's already arguably one of the worst days of my mom's life. I might as well just like pile it on now, you know, while the wounds are fresh. So I walked up to the limo and I cracked my head in and turned my aunt and I go, Ma, I don't know. I can't let you heal from this and then drop more bad news on you. So I'm just going to tell you now, I just got orders. I'm going to be deploying. And it was just, thank God bless her, my Italian mother is just calamity, you know, like yeah. Throw it all on at once. So, you know, that day I had to leave after all of the ceremony and after dinner to head back to, you know, they're all from Youngstown, Ohio. That's where my mom's side of the family's from. So I drove from Youngstown back to Washington, PA to start the SRP process. So I got in, I got slated, you know, got through SRP, it was time to go. We started training up in the fall and then to deploy right after New Year's. So that's where I went from there. I put, you know, told my job and going overseas. So that's how like that first phase started. And it was like finally the big break I was looking for. I know it's kind of a shitty thing to like say, oh man, I hope I get deployed because, you know, terrible things happen overseas. But at the same time, I looked at it like this is the adventure you're waiting for. This is going to change you. You know, you don't know how it's going to change you. It's just going to change. So I go through SRP, we go through train up in it's January like 12th or something. And, you know, we left for Fort Bliss, you know, from there we trained up, we flew into Germany. It was my first time in Germany since I was born in 1991. I was in JMRC in Hohenfels. Oh my God. I wouldn't send my worst enemy there. That place sucked. But, you know, JMRC was cool. It looked a lot like Pennsylvania, but, you know, we were there. We were training with our multinational partners, NATO partners. And then it was time to go to Kosovo. So my job, I actually filled in for an E6 slot as an E4 over there. I don't even know why, but I was one of two American combat engineers in country. We were the American contingent of our multinational battle group on the eastern side of the country. So the two of us, me and another captain who was also a combat engineer, we worked with probably 9 or 10 other countries as engineers, deconstructing fobs and you know, building up some air pads there in countries. So I got to go on a couple of missions with EOD. They busted my balls into oblivion because I was a combat engineer and they were EOD. You know, they get to do some cool stuff, but you know, it was a good experience. It was a good, you know, life experience. It was my first time outside of like the continental North America. Since I was born, you know, I'd never seen Europe, and I surely, like, when I would tell people I'm going to Kosovo, they're like, what the hell is Kosovo? Like, the older people older than me would know what Kosovo is because of, you know, the conflict there. We sent our first wave of troops there in 1999, and then, you know, 2001 happened, and it completely overshadowed what the mission was in Kosovo. And for those of you listening, it was ethnic Serbs against ethnic Albanians, and they just hated each other. You know, 15 years later, when I went, you know, the wounds were still, you know, pretty fresh in the country, but there wasn't that much, you know, infighting. They both respected each other's boundaries for the most part, so it wasn't crazy like that. But our HUMIT guys, I mean, those are some badass dudes, man. Our HUMIT crew. They caught whatever they do in plain clothes, they caught like 14 or 15 ISIS fighters going through Kosovo trying to make their way up to Germany. They had planned an attack in Germany, and we were coordinating with the KSF intelligence with Kosovo security forces, and you know, through our sneaky squirrel shit, they ended up catching the dude. So that was pretty crazy. But fast forward a little bit longer, you know, like got some shit overseas, got some trouble, you know, took a demotion, we were drinking with officers on Fort Bliss when we got home. The civilian contractors in Fort Bliss told us they were going to stay through like Thanksgiving Eve to out process us. So we got Thanksgiving with our families, and they ended up bailing on us. So we were stuck at Fort Bliss with nothing to do. We got a pass, so I got a hotel room, and it was kind of a unique deployment in the sense that there were a good bit of officers over there, and us junior enlisted guys worked very closely with them. It wasn't your, you know, conventional platoon element and led by a lieutenant, led by a captain. That wasn't really the dynamic. Like I was an E4, and I worked every single day with a captain as a combat engineer. So you get really close with guys, you know, you still respect the rank and respect, you know, the military command structure, but you know, you're riding around in a vehicle with somebody all day, every day, you know, you start to break it down a little bit and get to know each other. And, you know, Mike, if you ever hear this, you're the man. I know we bucked heads, but I still love you. But you know, when we got back and we were watching, you know, college football, and passing around a bottle, and that, you know, for anybody that knows, that was in violation of general order number one. I'm out now, so I don't care. I don't have to save any face. We got dimed out by our chaplain. He went snitched on the command team that there were junior enlisted drinking with officers. So they came and tossed our whole room. And the commander of our company, he just doesn't know how to deal with troops. He's a very poor leader. He ended up passing the investigation on to the 5th Armored Division down there so he could go home with the main body because he didn't know how to discipline us. So we all got left behind at Fort Bliss while the rest of the unit went home. There were 6 of us, and one of them, good friend Jake Hale, passed a couple of months after in a tragic accident, God rest his soul. But, you know, we were down there together, and it was just misery unknown. You know, when you get stuck there and they don't tell you anything, and you're just inside of that room all day, just watching YouTube and just like, when the fuck is somebody going to tell me, just take my rank, take my pay, just let me go home. Like, we're so close to the finish line. All we did was, you know, I get it, it's fraternization, but come on, like you're drinking when you come home from a year long deployment, you're on American soil, it's Thanksgiving. Give us a freaking break. But, you know, that concluded. I took a bump on rank. It was super embarrassing because I got back to my unit and there's all these new dudes. And, you know, I'm back to E3. It sucked because they were like, we had an E5 spot. Wait, like we were holding this spot because we wanted, you know, we were going to promote you as soon as you got back to the unit. You met all the prerequisites. And then I come back as an E3, and all the new guys are like, "Hey, who's the new guy?" And I'm like, "God damn it!" Like, you know, like,
the new guy with a deployment under his belt.
Yeah, exactly. It was very mixed signals, and I was just as salty as humanly possible. Like, I was just absolutely disgusted. I guess, you know, I'm more of a traditional, I want to say I'm more old school. So I think that the military should handle certain situations different. Maybe they do get handled different line units, but, you know, mind you, I was an augmentee. So I'm a dirty ass combat engineer rolling with a headquarters company, and they treated me as such. So a lot of good officers, and I respect a lot of them. And if any of you hear this, you know exactly who the hell I'm talking about. So we'll just leave that one there. Awesome. So I get home and I go, and I'm living with my mom, right? And I, you know, you get entitled to unemployment once you get home for, you know, the amount of months you were gone. So I just did every bit of busy work I could and fixed everything I could on our family farm at the time in Ohio. And I was just going stir crazy. So I had to get back into the workforce. So after about 4 months, I moved back to Pittsburgh. I get an apartment. And it was kind of at that moment, I was like, I know I can go back. Like, Flynn's was very good to me. I rode with them for a long time, and they were very, very, very good to me. But, you know, now I come back and I'm a deployed soldier. I've earned veteran status, you know, for whatever my deployment was. And I'm not trying to, you know, be a glory hound, because I know the difference between what I did and what, you know, men who took Fallujah and men, guys who fought in Ramadi, you know, right. I know what they did. So I'm not out here waving my banner as if I'm some kind of hero, but, you know, you get the title now. You're a veteran, your DD-214's jacketed up with some stuff. You know, I was able to take a lot of cool schools over there. I got my shoots and sneer with the German armed forces. I got the Edelweiss, climbed a mountain with the German Alpine infantry. I mean, they, you know, I got to do more there than I ever thought I would. And it made me a better soldier, made me a better engineer. So I decided, you know, I'm not going to go back to driving truck. I need to try something different. You know, I know I could go drive. There's nothing wrong with driving truck, but if you feel confident that you have more to give back to society, then that's the whole point of me being on the show, is just not pigeonholing yourself and saying, hey, I'm just a combat engineer, I'm just a, you know, a mortarman, or I'm just this, right? You're so much more than that. You got to make the military work for you when you get out. And right. that's what I really tried to do, was, you know, use all of the things that I had earned on my deployment and earned throughout the years and apply them to the workforce. And I really didn't know. I mean, I was 20, I just turned 25 years old. I didn't know my ass from a hole in the ground. I'm like, what do I do? Like, what am I eligible for? I still don't have a degree, but, you know, I have a deployment now. And so I went into contracting. It was just private security contracting. I went and got my Act 243, which is the credential you need to be able to carry a firearm as part of your job. So it's like below a cop. You know, I don't have any arrest power, but I can carry a gun as part of my job. So, you know, I'm going back and forth, this and that, doing just small side gigs that for armed guard work. And then I had a guy that I'd served with way, you know, he was like my first lieutenant in the military. You know, and then he rotated out into a different leadership position, but we'd always stayed close, you know, had a lot of respect for each other. And he hits me up one day and he was like, Nate, are you in love with your job right now? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm not married to it. I'm just figuring out what I'm going to do next. And he's like, all right, I got a gig for you. You know, I do engineering work for this guy, and he's kind of crazy. You know, he owns a manufacturing plant, and he's nuts. He lives like a playboy, but he wanted to know from me if I knew any guys in the military that would be interested in bodyguard work. So I was like, oh shit, like, okay, that's pretty cool. Like, yeah, right. Executive protection, let's do that. So I go and meet the guy. Scott, for Christ's sake, this dude was absolutely unhinged. And I mean, this was my first glimpse on how, like, you know, some elements of the other side live. Like, I'm sure, like, you and the listeners kind of wonder sometimes, like, yeah, what, I wonder, like, what George Clooney's day-to-day is, or, like, I wonder, like, what, you know, what do they do when they're not, like, on the screen, or what is it? And then I got just an absolute exposure of what it really was. And really, I just pity the guy. And no, to make a long story short, I wrote this guy for just under a year, and it was one of the craziest freaking things. I mean, it really opened my eyes. Like, holy shit! Like, no wonder so many really rich people end up in rehab. You know, like they just when you have no limit to what you're able to do because you have the money to do it. That opens up a can of worms. Like, that really exposes if you're a good person or not. And this dude had me do some crazy shit, but I was just getting paid hand over fist. Like, he didn't care. I was getting paid cash just to come and, like, hang out with him and babysit him. He'd get all loaded at the bar and try to start fights. He thought he was karate master, which was super embarrassing because he just, you know, he'd be hammered drunk when he would try to practice martial arts. So I'd be like, okay, let's move it along here. So I always put it like, you know, I wasn't protecting him from anybody. I was protecting everybody from him because he's such a nightmare in public. You know? But so I'm doing that for a while. Yeah, dude. I mean, he was just a crackpot, man. And like, I was like, I've never seen anything like this in my entire life. But this man is a very successful, like, multimillionaire. And I'm going to work for him, and, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see where it leads to, you know. It was cool because I was sitting in on a lot of very executive business meetings, you know, and hearing the things that they talk about and how they function on that plane and just how you know, the environment of the room was. It gave me the right kind of exposure. That's why I say, no matter how crazy he was, I've learned so much working with him, because if somebody that had a nose for business but didn't realize it yet, I started learning and started picking up on the things that were important and what drove progress in the business. So, you know, but it was just too taxing working for him. I mean, he would call me in the middle of the night and be like, "They're at my house right now." And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, like, what am I walking into this time? You know, it was always like a domestic argument. So, you know, I'm doing that. And then I had an account on clearancejobs.com. And if any of you listening have your security clearance, whether it's secret, you know, top secret, TSI, whatever the case may be, make a profile on there if you're into contract work, because that's how I was approached by a recruiter for a private contracting company out of Northern Virginia called Accelerate Solutions. And they reached out to me on Clearance Jobs because I had an active security clearance through the Army. And that's just because I never even knew it, but I was like, I had clearance to be in certain places in Kosovo. I had a carrier card, so that meant I was like I was okay to carry secret plans, stuff like that. And I didn't even really, it didn't connect. Like, I didn't understand what was going on until they reached out to me, because I was like, I have a security, why? I'm a combat engineer. Like, we sleep in dirt. We blow things up. Like, we stick boogers on each other. Like, we're just dirty cavemen living out in the woods. Like, what the hell? I didn't know I had a security clearance like that could be applied on the outside. I thought it was just military. So they reached out and they were like, I talked to a recruiter. They reached out to me and they were like, hey, we saw your profile online. Our company just won a contract with the Department of Justice. We need people with security clearances as programs analysts in the biometrics division of the Department of Justice, CJIS in Clarksburg, West Virginia. You know, that's a mouthful of acronyms that just stirred my brain, you know, like a blender. I was like, what? Like, you want me to do what? Like, biometric, like, I'm a bodyguard. Like, you want me to go work at a biometrics division? They churched it up. I mean, I thought I was, you know, about to be like Jason Bourne. but, you know, anything was better than the situation I was in at that point, because it was just going nowhere and I was making good money, but I was miserable. So, you know, this was a part of that journey, just saying yes, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, challenging yourself to something you had no idea what you were doing. And that was, you know, that was a big challenge. That was a hill for me to climb and a huge decision to make, because I didn't know shit about computers. Like, I was one of the last ones in the country to have a smartphone. You know, I pushed it off as long as I could. But I was like, hey, you know what? If you're willing to train me and if I could utilize this clearance that I have, like, yes, let's go. The money is right. You know, I'm willing to move to West Virginia, because if I want to continue contracting and getting into government work at a different level, you know, how many people get the call like, hey, do you want to get a contract for the FBI? Like, fuck yeah, let's go. Like, that's right. Pretty sweet, man. Exactly. You know? So, like, you know, not really knowing what to expect. You know, I talked to a buddy I was in high school with that also went into the Army, started out as an engineer. He was lieutenant. And we are just close as could be even to this day. He's an awesome kid. His name's Cody Newsom. He runs Battleborn training. So he's if you want to go throw him a like, I mean, he's jacked, man, and his training plans are awesome. So, but I call him and I'm like, hey man, like I got called by the FBI or this contracting company. Like they're filling a contract right now and they need people who are smart that have, you know, security plans. Do you have yours? He said yes. So I was like, if you want to apply with me, man, we could be roommates down in Fairmont, West Virginia. That's where I'm gonna move. He was like, yeah, let's go. Like, well, this will be cool. So we went down and we got, you know, we went through intake with the Department of Justice, and it didn't take very long for me to be down there to realize, like, holy shit, this is exactly like the military. Like, from the leadership to the demagoguery and, you know, just all the jockeying to get up top. Like, it was like exactly like being in the military. And you know, it turns out that's how most government contracting is. Right. And it made itself very clear to me that, like, okay, this isn't bad. I'm very secure. I'm good at my job. Like, they like me. You know, I'm starting to get mentored by the director of FBI operations for the company, because my goal was to learn how to pursue filling contracts for my company. I wanted to, you know, the selfish part of me was like, I hate living in West Virginia. I want to move back to Pennsylvania. Let me see if I could find somebody that could use contractors up there. So he started mentoring me, and the more I got exposed to it, the more I was getting hungrier. I was like, oh yeah, like, I don't need to be, you know, I no longer feel as though my only qualification is to carry a gun for my job. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I'm the son of a police officer, but I started picking up that I had a niche in just how business functioned, like how you win a contract, what to look for if he was teaching me these things. So from there, another year goes by, and, you know, I'm getting ready to be promoted. I'm in the promotion docket to go up from mid-level to senior program analyst for my company. And I'm like, you know what, that's a pay raise. Like, I'll have a small team. And again, you know, I'm met with this crossroads. Like, do you stay here and take, you know, this route to success? I mean, it's right there for you. We were one of the first ones to fill that contract. Mm-hmm. There was like four or five of us from my company, and then it eventually built itself up to like, you know, 20, 25, 30. But I was like, you know, this is very comfortable, because everything that I'm seeing around was what I saw in the military for the most part. And I know I have a future here. And I'm liked here, but again, I just wanted more for myself. I wanted to really apply this acumen I was building in the world of business. So a couple of buddies of mine worked for ADP up here in Pittsburgh. For those of you who don't know, it's automatic data processing. We're not the security company. We're the nation's leading payroll processor.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, they're just killing it up here, man. I mean, they're making, you know, six figures. They have, you know, their whole game plan laid out, and they're just really good at it. So, yeah, I didn't know what human capital management was. Like, I had no idea what they did at ADP, but I started questioning, you know, two of my very close friends, like, hey, what do you guys do up there? Do you think I'd be good? Do I have the personality for it? They're like, oh, hell yeah, Nate. Like, apply. Like, a lot of the hires that come through ADP are by word of mouth. It's all referrals. They gave me a referral, and I came and I interviewed the first time and didn't make it through, which was a blessing in disguise for the division that I was going through. They didn't want me, so they kicked me back. And then I came up and interviewed a second time. I got the job. So that was super exciting for me. You know, I told my company, I'm sorry, guys, I'm going to have to take off. And it's okay. You know, that was a stepping stone for me. And again, I learned a lot. It's just part of the journey. You know, because I went there led me to something better. So I come back up home, and my plan was I wanted to buy a house, but I didn't want to buy a house with a 2-week window. So I was like, hey, I'm just going to get this apartment, get a 6-month lease, start working, and then I'll have plenty of time to get my affairs sorted out, get a house. So I started working for ADP in their small business service division. And what we do is we consult with small business owners. It's like 50 employees or under are the business sizes that we're working with. We consult with the business owner and then set up their payroll and their human capital management. So making sure, you know, if they need benefits for their employees, that's taken care of. If the company needs a workers' compensation plan, that gets taken care of. You know, just the whole HR element of a business, plus with primarily being the payroll. So I start working for them and just like immediately it just snapped. Like my very, very close friend, Joe Tursak, who inspired me to come and work for ADP, and he was like the ADP champion of the world. Like he's number one salesperson in the entire company, countrywide. He's just a stud. And one of the most valuable pieces of advice he gave me as soon as I started there was like, Nate, don't drink the Kool-Aid, think outside of the box. You know, that's what the company doesn't want, somebody just sitting in the chair doing the 9 to 5, you know, like think of ways that you could create business because they encourage that. So I was like, cool. All right. That's great. I want to know what my boundaries are because my mind is constantly moving. I always have a hand in something. I always want to innovate something. So I started taking a look at veteran-owned businesses as a way to, you know, generate a book of business for myself. Cause I'm like, dude, like I could talk to veterans all day. You know, we just know how to talk to each other. You know, there's not that, it's not like talking to, you know, the older experienced HR lady, you know, and telling her like, oh fuck, man, like I got the rash so bad over there, like I couldn't walk right for a week. You know, like you can only get away with that shit with veterans, man. So it was like, you know, that's an easy conversation to have, it so I could have it with veterans. So yep. What I did was I started developing this plan in my head as to, you know, my vision, my long-term vision was to have a division at ADP that specifically serves veteran-owned businesses. So I start mapping it out in my head, like, hey, like, you know, how could I develop an ecosystem using veteran service organizations in Pittsburgh? Like, who handles veteran-owned businesses for these people? So I start talking to a lot of veteran organizations, and Bunker Labs approached me. I actually like, I reached out to them because I had heard they had an eye on Pittsburgh for a next chapter. So I called them and I was just like, hey, I just wanted to get information about when you guys plan on opening up shop in Pittsburgh, because, you know, I provide a service here. I'm trying to, you know, take care of veteran owned businesses, payroll needs, you know, like I just want to be a support structure for you. And turns out that they liked all of the pre-work that I did. Everybody that I met, the director of every veteran service organization in town, pretty much. And just to try to figure out like, hey, when a veteran approaches your organization and wants to start a business, you know, what do you guys have for them? And the answer was nothing for the most part. You know, the SBA was trying, but it was like two people, you know, trying to handle all of Western Pennsylvania is too much. So
just to stop you right there, for people who don't know, could you explain what Bunker Labs is all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Bunker Labs is just an incredible veteran nonprofit. I mean, just the coolest people ever. These are the people that you want to be around. What it is a networking organization that brings veteran entrepreneurs in to network with other veteran entrepreneurs. And they bring in successful business leaders who are veterans, and every chapter has three leadership positions. One is entrepreneurial, one is the community city leader, which that's what I am, and then one is like a planning operations, like a first sergeant role, right? They're doing all the planning for the event. So just to take you through a short walk of like what a Bunker Labs event is, and it all changed because of COVID, but I'll talk more about that here in a second. But you know, they set up a chapter, and then every month, or you know, whatever the need dictates, we get together, we drink beer, eat pizza, and talk about how our businesses are going, what it is we need, what resources, you know, what pitfalls to avoid. And that's how we support each other. Is I buy, you know, whatever I usually buy from like Walmart or whatever department store is. If that veteran's selling it, I'm buying it from them if I need it. So it is just this swelling organization that has a national presence. You know, it started out of Chicago with just a couple of chapters of just veteran business owners getting together, or veterans that wanted to go into business getting together and then figuring out what that path is like for them. So it's a super awesome organization. They have they have training, virtual online training set up. And the number one step is called Launch Lab Online. So if you have an idea, you know, Scott DeLuzio, I want to do a podcast, but I don't know the first thing about podcasting. You go through yourself, you put yourself through Launch Lab Online, which is I'm pretty sure it's about 3 hours and you can stop and go whenever you want. But what it's doing is vetting your idea and challenging you with questions you might not have asked yourself about your idea. And then when you graduate and come out on the other end, the whole thing is spun differently because you're realizing things that you hadn't realized before about what it's going to take to have a successful business. So
I totally could have used that about 2 years ago when I first started the podcast. I had no clue what I was doing. I didn't know where to go, how to even do a podcast or anything. And once when I got it set up and running, I made all sorts of mistakes. And so I know that would definitely have been useful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know what? It's not too late. We have this online ecosystem, aside from your city chapters, just called Bunker Online. And when you join that, it runs off of a tab system. If you are a veteran that wants to get into agriculture, there is a networking channel for agriculture. If you're going into e-commerce, networking channel for all veterans that are doing e-commerce. So it's like any question you could possibly ask, there is a veteran just like you that has either done it, going through it, or thinking about doing it too. And just the opportunities are endless from there. Like you don't know when the next Bill Gates is going to be like Elon Musk inside of Bunker Labs. Like that's the coolest part of it is where you would never interact at least directly with a veteran business owner from California. Now you're all being, you know, cycled through the same veteran business ecosystem. So you're meeting all of these awesome people from around the country. And it's just the leadership is awesome. They're really in tune. They support us city leaders with anything we need. So if you're listening and you want to check out Bunker Labs because you have a great idea, see what's the closest chapter to you. I think, you know, the last time I checked, I think we were closing in on 50 chapters nationwide. So there's chapters all over the place, and just start investigating it and become involved in the networking community because it's invaluable at this point. Like, you know, no one else is going to do for you what Bunker Labs is going to do for veteran entrepreneurs. So, you know, that they're awesome. Check them out. But yeah, so just continue along. They asked me, hey, would you be willing to be a city leader for us, you know, when we open up shop? And I'm like, what the hell? I don't know. Like a leader? I have no idea what you're asking me. I work in human capital management. Like, I don't know shit about opening a business or like what it takes. I can sell you payroll. Like that'll help. But, you know, I really don't know. And it's not the experience like that. It's exactly what we're doing now. It's just having the soft skills, having the emotional intelligence and, you know, banding people together. And that's what I had done preemptively. What I didn't know Bunker Labs was going to approach me with this offer, you know, to volunteer to do this. But, you know, on this ride where I was really digging my heels, and like, I don't want to bounce around from job to job. I want a good professional career path, you know, and this is going to be great for that because you never know who you're going to meet. So we launched Bunker Labs in August of 2020, but, I started ADP in October 2019, and I'm piecing together what would become, you know, this veterans program from the nation's leading payroll provider because, you know, I saw the value in it and convinced the right people. And we spent, you know, Harris Morris, who's the director of veterans initiatives for ADP, is like, you know, I'm the Robin, he's Batman. I mean, we work really well together in tandem to develop this out. You know, there's very few people in this world that cares more about veterans than Harris. But so we're just going straight into it. And I'm like cooking with gas. And then, boom, the pandemic hits and just completely, you know, upends everybody. You know, and no one could have seen it coming. And I mean, that was such a huge challenge because not only does, you know, I'm sitting here loading an AR, you know, when it first broke, you know, thinking I'm going to have to take my family and, you know, live in a forest community up in the mountains. You know? Like I got Johnny Cash when the man comes around playing as I'm loading my gun like a psychopath. So like, you know, society is a delicate balance and, you know, can fall apart easily. So, you know, when the pandemic hit, you know, we didn't know what it was really going to do. You know, that was pretty freaky. But you know, things subsided and we started game planning virtually. And coming to know it, you know, it was a blessing in disguise, because now, you know, you have the ability to virtually talk to everybody. You're not in the office where there's all, you know, all these conversations happening and all this chatter and people running around. Now I'm having these, you know, intimate conversations with how to develop this project, what is needed, what works and what doesn't work. You know, so from there, you know, I was the VP of ADP's Military Strong Business Resource Group. And then, you know, eventually became the president of it. And, you know, that we're developing it out from there. And then, you know, we start forming a veteran sales team at ADP. And, you know, you're starting to see your hard work finally take form. And it was like, holy shit, man, like what a wild ride this has been. And then eventually, you know, I get nominated as post commander. You know, a lot of the old VFW, Vietnam, you know, veterans, you know, a couple of World War II guys, when the pandemic hit and all the bars shut down in Pennsylvania, you know, our restrictions up here, no joke. When the bar closed down, a lot of those guys who were officers for our VFW post just stopped coming back. They just got old and they're like, you know, it's over. The time's over. So we got approached by the manager once everybody opened back up, and said, asked me and a very close friend of mine, hey, would you guys volunteer to be, you know, in the officer corps here? And I was like, hell yeah. Like whatever keeps this place on the rails, you know, we love it. We love it here. Now we're like two old men. We go play bingo and watch, you know, watch the Penguins lose in the first round of the playoffs. that's our spot. So I'm just, you know, whatever it takes. So, you know, I didn't know that they were going to nominate me to be the post commander. So I'm like, holy shit. Okay. I'm post commander now. Like, let's start planning events. So I get done with that just this month. Then me and the same guy I'm just talking about, his name's Nick Nutting. He's my business partner at Bridgeline Rock. You know, I saw kind of an opening in the market that wasn't targeted the thing that I wanted to target, and that being a veteran subculture of outdoor life. You know, if you end up following me on any kind of social media, I'm in a river, I'm in a boat, I'm like climbing up a mountain. Like I live like Tarzan. So, you know, and there's many veterans like me who are just avid hunters and outdoorsmen and fishermen and fisherwomen. And I didn't really see a lot of apparel that was targeting that sub, like I said, that culture of veteran life. So I was like, hey, you know what? Do you guys, I asked him and a guy I was in high school with that's a brilliant freehand sketch artist. Hey, do you guys want to go in this with me? You know, it's kind of like a side gig. We'll do it. Bunker Labs, you start seeing all of these people trying their hand at entrepreneur. You know, it's called, we call it the bug. I got the bug. I was like, hell yeah. Like, let's do this. You know, there's an opening for it. Let's go for it. So We started Ridgeline Ruck. We had launched the company in March of this year, right before trout season. And we made a lot of patriotic, you know, it's like old school, historical, patriotic inspired, like outdoor apparel design. And we, like I said, we had just launched, but for this contest that you're running, Scott, you know, I know I sent you some pictures over, but we want to give away a t-shirt to somebody that wins the contest. And, you know, we put two of our best sellers on there that specifically target white-tailed deer hunting and then fishing, you know, inspired by the Gadsden flag, hunter die and fisher die, with the original colonies. So you could either choose either one of those, or you could choose any t-shirt on the website, and we will send it to you free of charge. Just, you know, if you want to take a picture of you wearing it out in the wild, you know, we'll put you on the website. But, you know, if you have somebody in your family who's a veteran, or they don't even have to be a veteran, honestly, if they love the outdoors, that's who we're targeting. You know, and we got some pretty cool stuff. So, I mean, you know, it's been the business owner, the post commander, the project manager, forming a veteran thing, you know, a veteran community at work. It's all of it, man. I just completely immersed myself in the veteran life. And like I said, I'm just going back to it. Like, you know, make the military work for you when you get out, because I know it's different for me, being a National Guardsman and working a civilian job and knowing, you know, a lot of these guys, I have never seen depression in somebody's eyes like I saw those poor soldiers out at Fort Irwin. Oh my God, if I had to live there, I'd volunteer to go to prison. There's no way. Like if you're hearing this, and you have an option to go to Fort Irwin, just don't. And if you do, you're a sucker. Because that is the most – Fort Irwin, NTC, California was one of the hardest training sites I'd ever been to, man. It was just the heat there was ungodly. But, you know, I see guys like that who were stuck there, you know, for their whole contract. And I'm just like, holy shit, like how would this change my disposition if I was getting out from this active duty post? You know, what is going to be available to me on the other end of that? You know, we're living in a time now where you get to recreate yourself because this pandemic has changed our country. It's changed the world. There are all these different opportunities open to veterans right now. And, you know, I don't want to say, you know, if you're a veteran, don't wait for somebody to do something for you. You know, we're resourceful people and we're cunning, and you just have to tap into that and own it. And use it and make it work for you, because my journey in particular, and like I said, going from just being a tire truck driver into having and being involved in all these things that I'm involved in now, it's just such a blessing. You know, I give all the credit to God and my family for supporting me through this wild ride. You know, half of the shit I tell my mother, I can't believe she's not in the grave yet. You know, from private contracting to being a bodyguard to doing all this stuff, you know, I've taken my family on the ride with it. But, you know, the whole point of it is really take a deep look at where your strong suits are and develop a plan around them. And there are so many organizations that help veterans nowadays, from anything from hiring, you know, USO Pathfinder, to, you know, helping transitioning soldiers get acclimated to civilian life, helping them get a job, you know, DOD Skill Bridge. You could get paid by the Army to go work a civilian job during your contract and intern. You know, it's a paid internship. And our company is doing it, ADP. So if that's something that you would want to take a look at if you're still in, you know, there's all these great programs emerging and all of these exposed veteran service organizations that their whole lives revolve around helping veterans, you know, become comfortable and successful and, you know, challenging them with a new industry. So that's, I guess, my cliche message of hope to anybody getting out or anybody who's gotten out and is just not happy. Dude, just change. Whatever you have to do, if you were miserable, you know, it's easy for me to say because I'm single, I don't have kids, and I can really go in whatever direction my heart desires. You know, my family doesn't play too much into it, but there, no veteran, no service member of this country's military should have to live in misery because they don't think they have options. You know, that couldn't be any further from the truth. You just have to have the courage to attack it from the front. You know, get out in front of it. Try something. You might fail, but God knows I've failed plenty of times. I might still fail with all the enterprises that I'm in right now. But, you know, every failure teaches something. You stand up and you keep going at it headstrong. And that's my message to everybody else. And, you know, like Scott said, my name is Nathan Marino. You can look me up or do whatever, even if it's just to have a chat like we're having right now. And if I could try to, you know, give you a little motivation or point you in the right direction or introduce you to somebody in an industry that you want to get into, that's another big part of Bunker Labs, man. It's just every single industry resides in there. It's not all business owners and entrepreneurs. There's people like, you know, like me, who was just good at human capital management, that they wanted to be a leader in there. And there's a lot like me that work full-time jobs. And then next thing you know, we have an e-commerce, we have an established LLC, man. That paperwork comes in and it says official LLC in this Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You're like, holy shit, man, here we go. We're doing it. Like, look at this. This is amazing. We created it.
Right.
So it's just been such a fun ride, man. And I hope I get to keep going and, you know, staying out of trouble. I got all the drinking out of me in my Army days. So, you know, now I'm down to business and just having fun, dude.
Well, and I think that's an important takeaway too, is that, you know, if you're not happy with where you're at or what you're doing, try something new, change something. You know, my own background, was very similar, where I graduated college. I had an accounting degree. I worked in accounting and finance for a few years. And, you know, I was also in the National mm-hmm. Guard. So I was doing that while I was also training and, you know, deployed and all that kind of stuff. But I found out I just didn't like it. That wasn't the right work for me. It wasn't the right job for me. So I tried something else, and that wasn't the right thing for me either.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I got into entrepreneurship. I started my own business, and that seemed to fit. And I've been doing that ever since. And, and so it's like, you know, I just kept changing things. And I kept trying things. And fortunately, my wife was very supportive of all of these changes. But she also saw that I wasn't happy with what I was doing. So, you know, she could say, you know, well, stick with the stable job, but be miserable. But, you know, how good is that going to be for me? So, you know, she stuck with me and she supported it and everything. So
that's such a huge part of it, man. It's just realizing, like, you know, even if you're not happy, if you have to go through another struggle, it's so worth getting out of that unhappiness. You know, I like blinked and turned 30 years old. You know, my 7 years in the military went by like it was like I remember my first day at my unit, and then I remember my last day at the unit. I was like, what the hell happened, man? Listen, life is short. You get a few short years where you're really out there hustling. And if you don't find that good fit, you're just going to let time pass you by being in a place of misery. And that's not what you want to do. Remember, you're a United States service member. You know, you go through the hardest training. You're entrusted with some of the most expensive equipment, you know, even at a combat engineer level. Like, you know, they let us dumbasses touch all kinds of things that go beep and boop, you know? So right. It's like, don't undervalue yourself. You know, you're trained up. The United States government made an investment in you. So never think that you're just some broke dick that doesn't have anything. You know, stand up, talk to me, talk to people that are in, you know, in this ecosystem. We'll guide you the right way, man. That's just
for sure.
It's as easy as that. Just I decided on a dime that I was going to make a change in my life, and next thing I knew, you know, I'm happy and I'm helping veterans. That's all I could ask for, man.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all about having the right attitude and looking for the opportunities that are out there and looking to improve yourself. You know, if you're just content with where you're at, that's you're not going to move anywhere after that. You're just going to be in that same position. So, you know, hats off to you for making those changes, seeing the opportunities and tackling them, you know, and going after those types of things.
Yeah. Courage. You gotta have courage.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So to close out this episode, you briefly mentioned it earlier, but I wanted to just officially announce this giveaway competition that we're going to be hosting kind of jointly through Drive On Podcast and Ridgeline Ruck Apparel. We're hosting this competition, and like Nathan said earlier, the winner is going to be able to, you know, pick a shirt from their website, and you know, especially if you're into the outdoors, you're a veteran into the outdoors, the shirts that they have are awesome. You know, great sayings, great designs, everything like that. They're really, really awesome. So, so if you're listening and you want to enter this competition, head on over to driveonpodcast.com / Ridgeline Ruck giveaway. And this link will be in the show notes too of this episode. So once when you enter, you'll be entered in for a chance to win some great shirt, you know, opportunity from Ridgeline Ruck. And you know, I think you know, it's a great opportunity for everyone, you know, to you know, enter into this. You know, like you were saying before, even if you're not into the outdoors, but maybe you know someone else, you know, enter into the competition and see if you'll win. You know, you got nothing to lose, doesn't cost you anything. So I think it'll be you know, kind of a great opportunity for everyone.
Hell yeah, man. Support veteran owned businesses, man.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That's my only ask if anybody listening, man. It is not hard to buy something from a veteran owned business or a spouse owned business, man. Jeff Bezos got the whole dime bag to himself. So let's support each other, man. We're the ones that are gonna make this work as us veterans, you know.
Sure.
He got it all. You know, you don't need to go jump on and buy something else off Amazon, man. Support each other.
Yeah, his fortune's not going anywhere anytime soon. He's doing just fine. So So anyways,
yeah, he could get them. Yep. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you today, learning about your story and kind of how you've transitioned out. I think it's really, you know, kind of inspiring for other veterans who might be out there who are, you know, struggling with their own situation where they're not having a great time with the job that they're doing or the, you know, the career path that they're taking, and they want to make a change. They just don't know how to do it. But, you know, I think you offered some really great advice. You know, just jump in there and try something new, to, you know, jump on opportunities. Don't be afraid to try something and fail. You know, that's it's okay. It's part of life. We all fail at something at one time or another. There's no one who's perfect, who just goes out and, you know, is pissing excellence, you know, constantly. So, you know, I think anyone out there who's trying to make a change in their life, just do it. You know, I think that's the best way to do it. It's just get out there and do try something new. So thank you again for joining me.
Thanks for having really me on, dude. It.
Absolutely.
No doubt, Scott. Yeah, no doubt at all, man. It's been my pleasure. And like I said, if anybody wants to reach out, talk, hang out, network, you know, reach out to me via social media. Scott has a couple of my handles and we'll start from there. But thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I had a great time, man.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.